So we're looking at the Mishnah on the bottom of Daf Zayin Amud Beis. And the Mishnah is going to present a machlokas, actually a twofold machlokas, between Revi and Chachon. So by way of introduction, the machlokas between Revi and the Chachamim in this Mishnah revolves around the pasuk in Dvarim Yutes. The pasuk in Dvarim Yutes says the following: Vasher yavo esrei ehu bayar lachtov etzim. So we're talking about two people. One person is cutting down branches, trees from this forest. And then the pasuk says, "V'nidcha yado bagarzen lichros ha'etz." There's some relationship here between the axe and the wood. We're not exactly sure what happened here. And the next four words in the pasuk are the key words: "V'nashal habarzel min ha'etz." Just vaguely, you know, I'm not going to translate it literally, because if I do, I'll get into the machlokas here between Rebbe and the Chachamim. But let's just say in a more vague way that the barzel smacked up against the eights or fell out of the eights. Some relationship, again, as I said, between the metal part of the axe and wood. Again, we're going to have to see where this wood is coming from. Is this the wood on the tree that he's cutting down? Is this the wood that forms the handle that holds on to the axe? But somehow, there's a relationship, boom, between the barzel and the eights. And as a result of this, v'nashal ha-barzel m'neitz, u'matza esrei ehu v'mes. And it found, I guess, the body of his fellow Jew, and killed him. As a result, hu yonos al achas ha'orim ha'elu v'chai. He'll have to run to one of the cities of refuge and find refuge that he'll be able to live. So the question here is how to interpret v'nashal ha-barzel min ha'etz. So the Mishnah begins by presenting the shita of Rebbe. Rebbe says the following: that a person came into the forest to cut down trees, and he waves the axe in order to cut the tree. Nishmat habarzel mikito. And in this case, the metal part of the axe separated itself from the kat. The kat is the handle. The handle here is the piece of wood, at least according to Chacham. We'll see that Rebbe is not going to interpret the pasuk like that. So again, as a result of the fact that the metal part of the axe went flying as it was disconnected from the handle, v'harag, and it killed someone, Rebbe Omer eino gola. The Chachamim Omrim Gola. So let's start with the Chachamim Sheet. The Chachamim understood that this case where the victim was killed by the barzel, by the metal part of the axe, that is the case of Nashal HaBarzel Min HaEitz in this pasuk. And that's considered Hariga B'Shogeg. We'll come back and try to sharpen this approach of the Chacham in just 1 minute, but first, Rebbe says Eino Gola. And why does Rebbe insist that there's no Golos here? So the Meiri says the following: Halacha kechachamim. Why? Di ein ze karov lemezid. In other words, the reason why we reject Rebbe is because Rebbe calls this karov lemezid. We pass like the Chum, and it's not called Karv L'mezit. In other words, the negligence is too intense, according to Rebbe, to qualify him as a Shogeg. He's called Karv L'mezit. Why is he Karv L'mezit? Well, if the handle got separated from the metal of the axe, what does that indicate? Why did something like that happen? Correct. There's a faulty axe, and he should have checked it. The word in Hebrew for this is hiduk. Hiduk means when two things are connected very tightly. And apparently, in this case, he should have checked his utensil first, his axe first, to guarantee. After all, he's in a public area. There are people going through the forest. He anticipates people could get hit by it. He has to make sure that his utensil is not faulty. In lacking that act of checking to make sure that there was hiduk, he is karv lemezid. And I know this by detective work from the Meiri, because the Meiri says halachik echachamim v'ein ze karv lemezid. In other words, according to the Chachamim, the level of negligence here is not so extreme, so profound, that we should classify him as karv lemezid. He had no reason to suspect that the axe was faulty. Should he have checked the axe? Maybe yes. But checking the axe would have been, in a sense, to go beyond the letter of the law. And since there was no chiyuv to check the axe, according to the Chachamim, the Torah, therefore, v'noshal abarz l'mareitz, classifies this case as what? As shogig. So that's machlokas number one. Now, obviously, as we move on to the Mishnah, we're going to have to answer the following question. So how does Rebbe interpret the pasuk, v'noshal abarz l'mareitz? In what scenario does Rebbe hold it's exactly shogig and you go into golos? And that's what the Mishnah says now. The Mishnah says that if he went into the yard to cut down the trees and he waves the axe in order to hit smack up against the tree, and now what happens is that a piece of the tree, of the wood of the tree, min ha'etz ha'mitbakea, flies out of the tree and that hits a person who's victimized and dies, is Rebbe Omer Gola. Rebbe says in this case he goes into Golos. So let me ask you a question. According to Rebbe, is it fair to assume in the safe of our Mishnah that he checked the axe?
Yes.
Why not? He checked the axe. He did his due diligence. So there's no extra element of negligence here. No, I'm just saying, I'm just using this pedagogically to explain that according to Rebbe, in the case of the ratio where you say it's karv lemezid, because how did he guarantee himself the axe was not faulty? In the case of the sefer, he may have indeed done his due diligence. He did what he was supposed to do. The axe is a fine axe. The problem comes from a different side. What happened here? A piece of the wood flew out and killed somebody.
Isn't there not enough given in two cases? The first case, it's almost like Kerf Atzmai. It's a follow through from his own energy.
Right.
And the second is like a Gromma type situation.
Right, excellent. So we'll get to that soon, Daniel. But first, let's see the Chachamim. The Chachamim Omrim Eino Gola. Now, what would you say about the Chachamim? We've said that Rebbe in the ratio was part to YZ, part from Golos, because he's Karav Leh. Mazid. Can I apply that to Chachamim in the Sefer and say in the case of Menaif? No, that doesn't make any sense. Exactly. And that's what we call Karav Lohones. So we have here basically three different logical possibilities how to categorize the two different cases of the Mishnah. We've got everything together, all to boot. We've got a case which, according to one sheet, is going to be Karav Lemezid, and that's going to be Rebbe in the Reisha, in a case where, again, presumably he could have checked his axe and he did not. We're going to have to the other extreme, Chachamim in the Sefer, in Eitzam Mitbakeh, that's Karav Leh Ones. In the middle, we have Shogeg Mamish, which is the pasuk of V'Noshal HaBarzel Minayetz. According to Rebbe, V'Noshal HaBarzel Minayetz means, Minayetz means because of this barzel, meaning the axe, the eitz flew out. He's not considered overly poshea, because after all, there was nothing faulty about the axe, or as Rabbi Sammy points out, nothing. If there was a faulty in the axe, it had nothing to do with contributing to the victim. And we have the Chachamim in the Reisha, where the ball of the axe, the metal of the axe, went flying, which Chachamim consider Shogeg Mamish. That's been Noshal HaBarzel Min Ha'etz. Then the eitz in the pasuk, according to Chachamim, is not the eitz that flew out, that was smacked up by the axe and cut, but rather the handle of the axe itself is considered what? The eitz that the Torah is describing. That, I think, is a pretty good summary of the Mishnah. All this is correct, according to Rashi, but Rabbeinu Chananu offers a whole nother pshat. Now, in order to find Rabbeinu Chananu, you've got to look on Daf Ches Amud Aleph. And if you look on Daf Ches Amud Aleph, you'll see that there are two parts to Rabbeinu Chananu, the way it's printed. There's the skinny long part, and then there's the L, so to speak, coming out in the bottom. We're in the skinny long part, about halfway through, and we're looking midway through Tosis Af, if that helps anybody. And the Dibur HaMaskil is Min HaEitz HaMitbakea. Okay? And if you drop down to the third line, the first word of the line is O. So do you have that in Rabbeinu Chananel? Anyway, he says the following. It's only a few words, so if you don't see it inside, you know, if you have your own Gemara, you can try to underline it. That's a hashkafa issue, whether you make underlines in a Gemara. I just want to tell you a quick story. Once the Rav asked for a Gemara, because it was a different Gemara than the one we were learning. So somebody passed up a Gemara, and he noticed that things were underlined in the Gemara. So the Rav said, if it was my Gemara and I was underlining it, I would have to underline every single word on the page. That's what he said. I really made an impression of it. So the Rabbeinu Chananel says, O means I'm offering a second pshat. Nishmat HaBarzel, again, we're talking about the Resha, Klomar, Mikoach HaKoso Boeitz Levako, Nishmat Veholach Vehorag. It's just a few short words in Rabbeinu Chananel, but it really changes the pshat. We interpreted the Resha that the metal part of the axe went flying. It got disconnected from the handle. Rabbeinu Chananel is suggesting that no, that didn't happen before he smacked up against the tree, but rather what happened is the reason why the metal went flying in the ratio is because of the power of the momentum, if you could call it that, of the axe as it hits the tree. So again, before we get into Rabbeinu Chananel, let's just summarize. We're talking in the Reisha about the case where the victim was killed by the metal part of the axe. But now we have to raise the following question. That metal part, at what point in time did it go flying and get disconnected from the handle?
Downstream of the upstream.
Right. In other words, one suggestion is that as he was about to swing it and hit the tree, it disconnected. What does that clearly indicate, Rav Osai? That it's a faulty utensil. The axe is not good. And that gets into the whole machlok, as we explained before, between Rebbe and the Chacham, should he have checked the axe? The other possibility, and this is Rabbeinu Chananel's second shot, is that, on the contrary, there was nothing inherently faulty about the axe, l'chora, okay, you can argue with that point, but it wasn't that as he was waving and swinging the axe, the metal went flying and disconnected. But rather, he smacked up the axe against the tree, and that force in hitting the axe against the tree is what caused the metal to go flying, to get disconnected. So according to Rabbeinu Chananel, one could possibly say that Rebbe Shita in the Reisha is a parallel to the Chachamim in the Sefer, right? The Chachamim in the Sefer said that if the victim was killed by the piece of wood that went flying, there's no gullus. Why? Karvlonis. We could suggest, again, this is just Berzon talking, you know, my musings, that maybe Rabbeinu Chananel in his pshat in the Reisha would postulate that according to Rebbe, in the case where the victim was killed by the metal of the axe, the reason why Rebbe insists that Eino Gola is likewise because it's Karvlonis. In other words, what the Chachamim are saying in their understanding of Enoshal Abarzel Minayitz, the word min ha'eitz means definitely that the eitz is what caused the ultimate calamity. But the difference between the Reisha and the Sefer is that whereas the eitz triggered off in the Reisha a situation where the metal of the axe got disconnected from the handle, in the Sefer it was the eitz itself that killed, you know, a piece of the tree itself that killed the victim. But in both cases, v'noshal abarzel min ha'eitz, the eitz in the pasuk according to Chachamim is the eitz that he's cutting down. The Chachamim insist that we have no reason to believe that he was overly negligent, because it could very well be that this axe is a classic axe. You know, if you took a seker, how would I say? You know, of all axes, this would fit into the majority rules. But the problem was that somehow the momentum on hitting the tree is what loosened. Comes along Revi, and Revi might say in that case he's karv lomos. The other possibility is to say that Revi holds in this case is karv lomazi, because he glai milsa. Why was it that the momentum was able to detach the metal from the handle? Apparently, the axe wasn't your classical axe. In any event, I wanted to share that Ravina Chanal with you, because if you don't read it carefully, you could actually miss it. I don't want to use the term, it could fly over your head, because that gets scary. But that's what we have so far. Okay. Now I want to share with you a question of Tosfos which doesn't appear here in Masechta Makis, but rather appears in Masechta Sanhedrin. Tosfos wants to know, why does Rebbe, and the Chachamim for that matter, say that Yochayev, my call echad l'shitaso, Rebbe, in the case where the Eitz HaMitbakea, correct? That's the Sefer, correct? Rebbe says Yigola. And Chachamim, in the case of the Reisha of Nishmat HaBarzel Mikato, says Tosfos, in both scenarios, you should be potter from Golos. As I fake Tosfos. Why? Tosfos says that we've already learned in the Braisa that if the object that killed the victim moved in a totally different direction or in a totally different distance than what was initially intended, then you're not chayav golos. So let's go through two scenarios. For example, in one scenario he threw it towards the north and it somehow went towards the south. Potter from Golos. That's what we discussed last week. Second case was he wanted to throw it 2 amos and it landed 4 amos. Potter from Golos. Fractosis, I don't get it. In this case, where did he want the Eitz HaMitbakea to go? He didn't want it to go flying all over there where there's a man and it will kill him. He expected that the tree, the branches of the tree, would fall right below. I'm not a lumbyard man, but I guess that's what usually happens. And not only that, in the case where the head of the axe went flying, certainly that was a totally different direction than what his intention was. And Tosfos leaves this question unanswered. But Rabosa, I think according to what we said last week, we can offer a possible logical distinction between the two cases. What's the issue over here? Let's take, for example, the sheet of the Chachamim that if the head of the metal part of the axe goes flying at Yechayev Golos, right? Let's go to the ratio. Why Yechayev Golos? How do we interpret it? There was some element of negligence. What was the element of negligence? He didn't check the utensil. It's not coincidental that the head of the axe got detached from its body. It must be that there was some element of fault here. Rebbe goes very far. Rebbe says that it's karv lemezid, the way we interpret it going to Rashi. Leave out Rebbe Chacham, right? And Chacham say it's not karv lemezid, it's mamash shogeg. It's just that pshia, that negligence, that fits right down the middle. So again, if you're dealing with one issue, namely, what was my intention? Where did I expect this murder weapon to fly? And where did I expect it to land? And so forth and so on. Then we have the Sugi Liel that potters you because you didn't have any intention whatsoever for this kind of a distance. But here we're talking about a whole different issue. And the issue is, do we define the murder weapon as faulty? Could he have checked it and prepared earlier and avoided this terrible calamity that took place? And therefore the element of negligence here is irrelevant to the distance in which the Eitz HaMitbakeya flew or the Barzel flew out of the handle. That's not relevant to have discussion. What we're measuring here is levels of negligence. Does the fact that the Eitz HaMitbakeya went flying out, does that indicate that he was a poshea or not? There, in the case Liel, I think, we're talking about a case where something happened that was totally not on his radar screen. You know, there was no mental connection to it and no intention. Again, this answer to Tosfos' question, which I'm offering, would be, I think, more appropriate for the Reisha of our Mishnah than the Sefer. Meaning, in the Reisha, clearly the Chacham is saying there is an element of negligence, that's why he's Gola, and the reason is he should have checked this axe, he would have found out up front it's faulty, and it could be detached. According to Rebbe, the element of negligence is so intense that it's Karv L'Mezid. Certainly that has nothing to do with the Sugilia. The Sefer, now I'm pushing it a little bit. In the Sefer, Min HaEitz HaMitbakeya, again, if I go with Rabbeinu Chananel that says that the head of the axe went flying as a result of the momentum, the smack up against the tree, that might indicate that he should have done a better job checking out the axe, and then it has nothing to do with the Sugi Liel, and Kushas Atosis Meturetz. If on the other hand, the Sefer is talking about a case where the murder took place as a result of a piece of wood that went flying from the tree, their Tosfos' cash is better than Arian's. Okay, Rabbos. Having learned the Mishnah, now we want to find out what's the source of the machlokas. Now, Rabbos, it's interesting. And you could really get a little bit confused here. When we explain the Mishnah, according to Rebbe and the Chachamim, and we came down to some grassroots as to why they argue, you know, is it Karv L'Mezid, is it Karv L'Ones, what was the extent of his negligence? That's what I call a machlokas b'svara. The Gemara, though, is looking for a different kind of approach. The Gemara thinks that those various svaros emanate from or result from two different interpretations of the pasuk. Meaning, what the Gemara wants to do is take us back to the pasuk in Dvarim Yutes, v'nashal ha-barzel min ha-eitz, and analyze those words in the pasuk. So in a sense, what we would be giving a shir on now, in the context of the Gemara, is not lavdus, it would almost be parshanut. Meaning we need the methodology for how to interpret a pasuk. And there are two methodologies offered, one according to Rebbe and one according to Chacham. Tanya, we have a brice. Omer lehem Rebbe lechacham. Rebbe asks the Chachamim the following question. It's kind of like a rhetorical question. V'chi nemar, does the pasuk say v'nashal ha-barzel me'etzo? Meaning that the barzel, the metal part, got separated from its own eitz. What would be its own eitz? When you say the axe's own piece of wood, its handle. That's not what it says in the pasuk. Valolo nemar ella min ha'eitz. Meaning that the eitz that we're talking about is not the eitz of the barzel, i.e. the handle of the axe, but rather a piece of wood of the tree, which went flying and killed them, which is exactly Rebbe's interpretation in the Sefer of when the pasuk is mechayev you, golos, for killing some v'shogeg, for cutting down trees. The answer is because the tree, or the branch of the tree, went flying and killed somebody. V'od. And Rebbe says, I'll go even further. Nemar lemata. The next part of the pasuk says, v'noshal ha-barzel min ha-eitz. V'nemar eitz lemala. And earlier in the same pasuk, it says, asher yovo esreyu b'yar lachtov eitzim. It says that they came into the yar to cut down what? Trees, eitzim, correct? So again, we have these two psukim. We have v'noshal ha-barzel min ha-eitz, and we have lichrosa eitz. In both cases, the same word is used. Ma eitz amr lemala min ha-eitz ha-mitbakeya. In other words, when it says that he came lichros eitz, We're not talking about cutting down the wood of the handle of the axe, but rather the tree itself. Is af eitz ha'omer lamata. Here too, when it says v'nashal ha'barzel min ha'eitz, it means which eitz? Ha'eitz ha'mitbakeya. This is what you'd call a kind of gzeirah shavah. Meaning, if in the same pasuk the word eitz, ayin tzadi, appears twice, it should ostensibly mean the same thing in both cases. And since when it says in the resha that he came into the yar lichros ha'eitz, the eitz is referring to the tree that he's cutting down, so to v'nashal ha'barzel min ha'eitz means that something came from that same eitz that he's trying to cut down. So those are the two arguments that Rebbe puts forth against the Chacham. And again, all this is what I call Parshanut, meaning in order to interpret the words of the Pasuk. We'll soon see why Rebbe feels compelled to give two different explanations, two different arguments. Now the Gemara says, Amar Rav Chiya bar Ashi, Amar Rav, Ushneim Mikra Echad Darshu. The Machlokus is how to interpret these words in the Pasuk V'Noshal HaBarzel B'Neitz. And their Machlokus about how to interpret V'Noshal HaBarzel B'Neitz is a fundamental Machlokus which reveals two different methodologies about how to interpret words in the Torah and has an impact universally across the entire Torah. Rebbe Sofer, Rebbe waves the flag of Yesh Ein Lamasores. Okay, I'm skipping a few words for a moment. For Rabbanan Savri, Yesh Ein Lamikra. So let me try to interpret this Gemara the best way I know how. And I hope I'm doing justice. I think the word aim here means what's primary. What should we be looking at? When we see words in the Torah, there are two different perspectives on the words of the Torah. One is called Mesoret, and the other is called Mikra. And the question is, which is primary? Which should be the focus of our attention, and which should be the basis from which we derive halachos? So Rebbe holds that the Mesoret is critical. The Mesoret means not the way we read the word, but rather the way the word is written. And it says, and let's go back to the Gemara and I'll fill in what we left out before. The Torah says, V'nishel ksiv. Now, literally, if you take this Gemara literally, what Rebbe is telling us is that the Mesores, that's the way we write the word in the Torah, is V'nishel. As if we add a yud between the nun and the shin. So all the Mefarshim, as we'll soon see, reject that. You can't take the Gemara literally. What he's saying is, Rebbe, that we read, you know, when we look at the word as it's written, the word that's written, although that's not the way we read it, that's not the Kriya, but the way it's written is V'nishel, meaning with a Chirik under the Nun and a Tzera under the Shin. We're not adding a yud over here. I mean, the yud is added by the text of the Gemara in order to clarify that under the nun there's a chirik. Okay? Now, let's just understand, before we ask the question according to Rebbe, why should we see the pasuk as written v'nishel and not v'noshal? But let's first ask a different question. Okay, let me grant you that what it says in the pasuk in the Torah is v'nishel. So what does that mean? The answer is that the word v'nishel means that, I think in English it would be called causative, that the barzel caused something to the eitz. And therefore Rebbe says if v'nishel is causative, it's like, for example, v'hidlik, right? Because the chirik under the hay means that you did an act to set up a flame that's burning. Right? So here too, V'nishal ha'barzel min ha'eitz means that the barzel caused something to the eitz. What did the barzel cause to the eitz? Obviously, we're talking about the eitz ha'mitbakea, the piece, the chip of wood that went flying. Okay? Now, the second question we have to ask on Rebbe is, how does Rebbe know that what it says in the pasuk is v'nishal? How does he know that? After all, we read it v'nashal. How does he know it says v'nishal? So here the Mefarshim say the following. that if you read a chamatz under the nun, it's sort of like adding an extra letter, an aleph, right? And this is true if you've ever seen Yiddish written. When you want to indicate that there's a chamatz under a letter, you add an aleph afterwards. Just like if you want to indicate there's a chiruk under a letter, you add an ayin. You know what I'm talking about? Mm-hmm. If you've seen Yiddish. So if you were to write out the word v'nashal, and the Torah would want to indicate that there is a chamatz under the nun, basically you'd be adding an aleph. Now, Rabbi say, don't misunderstand me. I'm not saying that the Torah should have added an aleph in order that it would say v'nashal. But what I'm saying is the very fact that you need an aleph means that you're going sort of beyond. In other words, that the simple way of reading the pasuk would be not v'nashal, but v'nishel. Meaning, when you have three letters, nun, shin, lamed, then until proven otherwise, the premise, the assumption is that there's a chirik under the nun. That is not a komatz under the nun, v'nashal, but v'nishel. So, let's see how the chachamim are going to convert it into v'nashal based on yesh eim lemikra. But again, let's just review. If I hold yesh eim lemesoret, then the way the word is written in the Torah is v'nishel. And since it's written as v'nishel, although we have a tradition that it's read v'nashal, but since it was written in a way that it should be v'nishel, which is causative, then to cause the eitz means that there's a piece of wood that went flying. Rabbanan Savri, yesh eim lemikra. Notice the way we darshan psukim in the Torah is based on the way it's read, not the way it's written. And the way we read it, based on tradition, is v'nashal. So even though the Chacham agree, that the ksiv is v'nishel, but the kri, as we call it, the way it's read, is v'nashal. Oh, so what do we gain by that? So v'nashal means that the barzel of the garzen noshal. Noshal means it got detached. It was dropped out. So again, v'nishel habarzel mina eitz means that the barzel had some impact on the tree. That's called causative. That's called v'nishel. V'noshal means that the barzel was passive, and in this case, the barzel fell, so to speak, which means it detached itself from the handle of the axe. Now the Gemara says, wait a minute, is this true? And we're at the end of Daf Zayin Amud Beis. V'Rebbe Yesh Eim LaMasores Svirle? Is it really true that Rebbe's of the opinion that Yesh Eim LaMasores? Now we go on to Daf Ches. V'Ha'amar Rabbi Yitzchak V'Rebbe Yossi Amar Rabbi Yochanan. And here Rabbi Yitzchak has a long list of Tanoim who maintain Yesh Eim LaMikra. That seems to be the majority opinion. And on the list, first on the list is Rebbe. Then we go on to Rabbi Yudah ben Roei, to Rabbi Shammai, Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Kiva, Kulu Sfirle, they all agree, Yesh Eim LeMikra. So the Gemara answers, Hainu the Kamar Luviyod. That is exactly why Rebbe quoted the Gzeirah Shavah, that Nemar Eitz Lamala, Nemar Eitz Lamata, just like Eitz Lamala is referring to the Eitz Amid Pakeah, so to Eitz Lamata is referring to Eitz Amid Pakeah. Why did Rebbe feel compelled to the Edviyod? Because his first argument was based on a reading of the pasuk v'nishel, which reflects the sheet of yesh eim lemesores. Rebbe wasn't so comfortable for that because, as a matter of methodology, Rebbe maintains the yesh eim lemikra. So he gave the second answer. So the Ritva here on this sugya is very baffled. Why would Rebbe have offered the first answer, which is antithetical to his methodology, and then, because he's uncomfortable with it, he would add the second answer? So the Ritva says the following, that ultimately, although Rebbe holds umetum, you know, as a general rule, yesh eim lemikra, here in this case, Rebbe holds yesh eim lemesora. In other words, the reason why Rebbe holds that the chiyuv goes in this case is because of the eitz hamitbakeah, is because he is focused on the way the word is written in the Torah. That's called Yesh Eim LeMesores, namely v'nishel. Ah, you'll ask me, but Rebbe, you hold Yeshem LeMikra. The answer is, but because we have the Gzeirah Shava of Nemar Eitz Lamata, of Nemar Eitz Lamala, therefore Rebbe says that proves that this is the exception to the rule, and in this case, the emphasis is on the Mesoras and not on the Mikra. That's the Ritva's thesis.
Shouldn't
it
give the second Teretz first in that case? Because that proves the first Teretz.
Well, in other words, in a sense, what Rebbe is saying in the first Teretz is, look, let's look at it from Yesh Eim LeMesoras perspective. Oh. So what are you going to tell me? That we hold Yeshem LeMikra. Certainly the Chachamim say it, so Rebbe says, but I'll convince you that in this particular case, you're going to have to accept the position of Yeshem LeMisoris. All right. Now, Daniel, we come back to your point from before. Omar, Rav Papa wants to know, what happens if I throw a clump of soil up to a tree, and I knock down the dates that are hanging on the tree, and the dates fall down with a roar, with a thump, they kill somebody. Hi man, excuse me, man deshada pisa is gush afar, it means a clump of soil. Like he made like a snowball out of soil and he threw it up, ridiculous, to a date tree. The atar tamri, and a cluster of dates came flying down. Okay, there are all sorts of mutzah issues here, but we're not going to get into that now. The azul tamrei v'kotel. And these tamrei, the dates flying down, fell on someone's head and they killed them. What should be the din in this case? And to be honest with you, Rabosai, I think it's a nice shiloh, but I didn't think it had anything to do with that mishnah. And look at his answer. He says, banu l'machlokes derebi v'rabanu. In other words, this is exactly the case of Eitz HaMitbaker, which according to Rebbe is the case of Roshal, Abarzal, and Eitz, and your Chayiv Golos. According to Chachamim, you're not Chayiv Golos. In other words, what the Gemara is saying the following, a fascinating new perspective on the sugya of Rebbe and Chachamim. Rebbe and Chachamim are arguing on the following question: when the Eitz HaMitvakeh, the piece of wood, goes flying from the tree, how do we view that? Do we view it as what we call Koach HaAdam? This is the power of man. This is considered your action. And therefore it constitutes a Maisa Ritzicha. It's a Maisa Ritzicha. You killed someone. You, in effect, took a piece of wood from the tree and banged the guy over the head, inadvertently, not deliberately, and you killed him. That would be Rebbe Shita. Rebbe says, V'noshal abarzal min ha'etz, we're talking about the eights of the tree that he was chopping, and it went flying and killed someone. That is as if you hit the guy over the head with the piece of tree. That's called koch. Comes along with Chacham and say, man, you didn't send out a piece of the tree. You were working with an axe. The power and the momentum of the crash of the axe against the tree is caused the piece of tree to go flying. That's not kochel. That's already indirect. Daniel used the word groma. The Gemara is going to use a different term, koach kochel. It's the koach of his koach. Now, his koach is the axe hitting against the tree. Now a new force comes into existence as a result of the first force that he created, and that's the force of the piece of wood that goes flying. That's already not his action. That doesn't constitute a Maaser Tzichah. And if this be the case, Rabosai, then the machlokas between Rebbe and Chachamim and our Mishnah would be nogea to a murder case and capital punishment. Meaning, if he deliberately, again, I don't know how he would scientifically set this up, but if he set this up in such a way that as he's chopping down the tree, he knows that a piece of the tree, you know, he figures out the angles, is going to fly and kill someone, Rebbe would say he's a rotzeach. He's chayv misa for that. According to Chachamim, on the other hand, it's koach kocho. It's not really his koach. So Rav Papa says that that's exactly the case where you throw something against the tree, bang it, you know, in this case it's a clump of soil, bang it up against the dates, and the dates come flying down. Rebbe sees this as what? As kocho, right? Because the throwing of the clump against the tree is exactly parallel to what? the power of the axe against the tree. The power of the axe against the tree sent out a piece of wood. That's called koho. So too, the thrust, the momentum of the clump of soil hitting up against the dates is like your action, your force hitting the dates. And now the dates fall. That's all part of your koho.
They're not really conscious because you want the dates. So by throwing it, you are responsible because that's
the... Well, I don't know. You want the dates meaning what? You want to eat the dates?
Well, you expect the dates to come.
You're collecting dates. I mean, you're harvesting dates.
That's right.
I'm not sure that that's why you're doing it. Yeah, but okay. Otherwise, why are you doing it? You're not trying to kill somebody, right? Then he would be amazed if not to show you. He also wants the wood. I don't know if he wants the wood to fly, you know.
I'm saying he doesn't want the wood to fly. That's no intention. But I think he wants the dates. So therefore, he is responsible for the...
So wait, if I understand you correctly, you want to say that even the Chacham in this case would say he's Chayav Gomer.
By the dates, yeah, it just seems like you
interesting. Sure. Take a look what the Gemara is going to say. The Gemara is going to say, Pshita. I don't understand what you're teaching me, Rav Papa. And listen to Gemara's answer. The Gemara is going to say, Ma'al de Tema, I would have argued if not for Rav Papa. That what? That as far as the case of the dates is concerned, Kikoach Kocho Tome. Meaning that even Rebbe would hold that in the case of dates, you're putter from goals. It's called Koach Kocho. In other words, the Gemara is arguing the following. In the Havamim, again, it could be the Maskana, we'll have to come on to what you were saying, but at least in the Ma'al de Tema, without Rav Papa, we would have said that if you take an axe and you smack the axe against the tree, right, and there's direct contact between the axe, which is an extension of your arm, and the Eitz HaMidbakeah, the force of the Eitz HaMidbakeah as it flies out is considered your force. That's where Rebbe says Yechayv Golus V'Noshal Eitz Menavars. However, in the case of throwing up the piso, what's it called, the piso ledikla, there your contact is not at all with the piece of the with the dikla. Your contact is with the piso. Great. Again, let me just point this out one more time. I'm trying to convince myself, so bear with me. Again, when you take an axe and you hit it against the tree, the force of that tree is your force. But when you throw something at something else, and you have no contact with that something else, you just threw the clump, that something else, which in this case is the cluster of dates, comes flying down, that's already koach kocho. His koach is to throw it up against the tree. Now it hits the dates. The dates is an entirely different koach. And therefore, even Rebbe would agree he's part of from Golos. It's not a Maisa Ritzicha. It's called Koach Kocho. That's the Havamina of the Gemara.
But I could launch an arrow up into the air and say, I have no intention of it hitting anybody, but...
No, but you put the force directly into the arrow.
But it hits something, but the Seder, but... Unless he's quicker. I can't imagine why he'd be throwing something at dates if he didn't want the dates.
No. I don't think the Gemara is putting the emphasis here on whether he wants the dates or not. What the Gemara is saying is that the action of sending the branch off is directly your action. That's called Koach HaAdam. Correct? Koach HaAdam. It's like, for example, in Netilas Yadayim, when I pour the water off my hands. That's called Koach HaAdam. Correct? But if there's water coming and I just take away the barrier, that's already Koach Kocho. Okay, that's a sugya in Sanhedrin. But what we're saying here is that when he throws the cluster up, you know, his force is banging upwards, and now there's a whole new force that's coming down. That's the Gemara calls Koach Kocho, and even Rebbe would agree that you're patur. Just one second here. He quotes the Ritva. And in the footnote, he quotes the Ritva. The Ritva says the following: that the case of the cluster ain't zed dovel akisa manitas min eisam itpakeh. Sham in the case of eisam itpakeh, ocheis ha'adam es hagarzen biyodo b'shas hakav b'ilon. He's holding on to the axe as it comes smacking down on the tree. Ulefichach, therefore, yesh lodun es hagarzen kigufo. The garzen, as he's holding it, is his own body. Vesakisem kikocho. The kisem is what's coming from his koach. Aval kan, but here, gush ha'ofar kvar eno biyodo. It's already It's already flying in air. You know, he can't say, now there's a power in the Gush HaAfar. That's called one Koach. And therefore, Yesh Ladun HaGush KeKocho. Okay, so if it was only one Koach, the Koach of the Gush, that would be Kocho. But HaTmarin, the Tmarin that's coming down as a result of the Gush, that's already Koach Kocho. Ulefocho Migolus. Oh, now, what do we do with the next three words? Kamashma. So Rav Papa says no. With all due respect, that's not so. Meaning that Rebbe would define the Gush HaOfar exactly as he defines the axe hitting up against the eights. Both cases are considered Gufa and not Kocha. So again, what we're saying is the following. In the Mao de Tema, we thought that the axe is considered Gufa, but the cluster of Afar is considered Kocha. And then Afkamina is going to be that if the axe is considered Gufo, then the Eitz HaMitbakea is Kocho, and he's Chayev. But if the cluster is considered Kocho, and not Gufo, then the dates that come flying down are considered Kocho, and therefore he's Pot. Kabashmul Nen. The Chiddush and the Maskara is that even the Gush HaAfar is considered Gufo. And if the Gush HaAfar is considered Gufo, then the Tmarim is considered Kocho and he's Chayv. The only problem I have is, what are the Chachamim hold in this case? You see, when I understood the Chachamim in our Mishnah, I thought that Eitz HaMitpakeh is a kind of Karv La'onis situation. Are we going to therefore say, I mean, the Gemara doesn't say it. It would be antithetical to the Gemara to say that throwing a cluster of soil, you know, this Gush Afar up to hit the Tmarim, that's considered Karov Leones? Is that what we're saying? Meaning, are we measuring this in terms of negligence? The statement. That's not what it says to the Gemara. The Gemara says something entirely different. The Gemara is saying that the issue here is whether it's Kocho or Koach Kocho. And the Chachamim view, according to Rav Papa, both in the case of Eitz HaMitpakeh and in the case of the Tmarim coming down for the Gush HaAfar, as Koach Kocho. So everything we said when we learned the Mishnah is completely thrown overboard. Because when we learned the Mishnah, the machlokas between Rebbe and the Chachamim revolved about one issue, and that is, what is the nature of his, what is the level of his negligence? Is it Karv L'Mezid, Karv L'Onis, is it Shogeg, and so forth and so on? And we thought that Eitz HaMitpakeah, according to Chachamim, is Karv L'Onis, until Rebbe Chananel maybe switched it around. Fine. Now, it's a totally different story. The machlokas between Rebbe and Chachamim revolves about the following question. When a man hits a tree with an axe, do we view the force of his arm going onto the tree as Kocho or Gufo? And so too, if a man throws a clump of Afar up to the top, do we view that as Kocho or do we view it as Gufo? Rebbe sees it as Gufo, and therefore when the piece of wood goes flying or the dates coming down from the tree, that's called Kocho. Chachamim see that the Eitz HaMitpakeach is called Kocho, and therefore in the case of the Tmarim is considered called Kocho. And Rabosai, Bokuto, we got a whole new story here. It's not what we said. And frankly, I'm a little uncomfortable about this because, you know, I can tell you that, you know, that I made a mistake, or I can tell you that maybe there were two interpretations of Machlokas, Rebbe and Chachamim. Rav Papa comes up with this whole original thing. But Rabosai, before we leave the sugya, I just want you to contemplate the repercussions of this discussion. This machlokas between Rebbe and Chachamim, which we thought revolves around the issue of golus, which is no minor question, I'm not trying to be mezalzel, but it has tremendously far-reaching implications for Kol HaTargula, for Shechita, for Netilas Yadayim, for Tzicha, B'mezid. I mean, where do we define Kocho? Where do we define Gufo? Do we say that any force that a person generates is called gufo? Or do we say no? If a man creates a force, that force is to be viewed and defined independent of the gufo. That's his koach. Man is chayav for his koach. But what happens if that koach triggers off another force? Then it becomes koach kocho, unless I view the first force as gufo. That's what comes out of this.
In Ilum Shabbos, for Havod, don't we say Zerik is like Hanocha, he's like your own goofy, Zerik, you're able on.
Well, yeah, you mean. Zerik basically, let's ask the following question. Are you considered Chayev in Kala Torah Kura for Zrika? Is there any difference between someone who smacks up against something or somebody who throws something against them? And the answer is there's no difference whatsoever. In both cases, he's Chayev. Whether it's Shabbos, whether it be Netilas Yadayim, in Shabbos from Melechus Zorek, or for example, if you learn the Sugya Gittin of Venosan Biyada, the Mishnah says at the beginning of Perkat Zorek that if he throws the get into her hands, that's also called Venosan. The Torah always equates throwing with placing or putting a force. But here's where Rebbe goes very far with that equation. And he says the equation is A equals A. There's no hair's breadth of difference between throwing something and smashing something with your hand or with the utensil that's in your hand. And therefore, the new force that's engendered as a result of your throwing is called kocha. The chacham, on the other hand, say, wait, you know, a direct action of your hand is one thing, and a zrika is another thing. In both cases, you're chayav. But for two different reasons. In the first case, you're chayav because of gufo. In the second case, you're chayav on kocho. And the nafkamina is going to be, what happens is as a result of throwing something and hitting item A, now that item engenders a new force and impacts on something else. Is that called kocho? Or is that called koch kocho? So let's say, for example, I had a cup of water. I can't imagine this, but let's say I had a cup of water and I threw something at the cup of water. The cup of water turns upside down and my friend's hands are underneath it. Would that be Netilas Yadayim? It would be totally in this machlokes, Rebbe and Chachamim. If I view throwing something as gufo, so when the water spills over from this thing, that's called kocho. But if on the other hand I view throwing something against this kli as kocho, that would be fine. I'd be chayav for destroying the kli. That's, I'd be a mazik. It would not be groma. But on the other hand, when now the kli turns over and sends the water on this guy's hands, that's called kocho, which is not good enough for the Netilas Yadayim or for shvita or whatever the case may be. So what I would suggest, again, if we had lots of time, there's a Rav Levi Halpern, I assume he's still around, I hope. I mean, I heard a shiur from him like 40 years ago. He wasn't a youngster then. But let's assume. So he has a machon in Bayit Vegan, and he wrote a book called Maisu Groma. It's a 200-page book just to define the difference between Maisu and Groma. And I would love to see, I'm sure he has a whole chapter on defining the difference between kocho and koach kocho, and in all likelihood, he's going to quote and maybe even start with this machlokas, this sugya, on Daf Chesamna. So if anyone has the book, it's called Maisu Groma, you know, please, let's research that. Ella koach kocho l'Rebbe hechi mishkachas. Now you're telling me that when I throw something at something and that something now creates a force, that's considered kocho. So what would be the case of koach kocho? The Gemara is not asking a kasha, by the way. The Ritva already points out. The Gemara just wants to know intellectually. So what is? Give me a case, a paradigm case of koach kocho according to Rebbe. Kigon. Okay, this is a real chaganya. Dishana pisa. So he throws that gush afar. Umachye ligirma or ligarma. In other words, he hits up against what? Against a tree, against a piece of a branch on the tree. The azil girma. Umachye likvasa. So a piece of wood that goes flying out of the tree, because again the tree was now hit by this gush afar, smacks up against a cluster of dates. V'otar tamri the Ozel Tarvikot. And now the Tmarim come flying down and kill someone. So again, he threw up something against the tree. Now the piece of the tree goes ahead and smacks up against the cluster of dates, and the cluster of dates comes down and kills someone. That's called Koach. The Mishnah says, Hazorek Evan. This is a fascinating Mishnah. I'm very excited about this Mishnah. Not about the death that occurs, but just about the love itself. It's a beautiful Mishnah. Hazorek Evan Lirshus Harabim Veharag. Again, you and I are probably thinking, what an idiot. You know, this guy should be tied and fed three times over. What's he doing? Throwing a stone into Rishus Harabim. And the Tanakhama says, Hare ze gola. He goes into golos. And the Gemara is going to be very upset with this. I mean, this guy is a real... I would almost call him amazing, but he's certainly Karav amazing. What right does he have to throw stones into Rishus Aram? Unless he's a Palestinian terrorist. I don't know. Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov Omer, Im mikshayotzesa ha-even miyado, even miyado. If after the stone left his hand, hotzi hala es rosho. Right, so let's say the victim lives in a house that borders on Rishus Harabim, and as the stone is in flight, the victim pops his head out, and basically the kibla, he so to speak, catches the, well, not with his hands, you know, he didn't make a Willie Mays catch, his head catches this stone, and Nebuch, he dies. Harezer potter, he doesn't go into gods. Okay. Now, the Ritva and all the Mefarshim Pe'echad say the following, and this is interesting methodologically, that Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov is not coming to argue with the Tanakhama. He's coming to elucidate the Tanakhama. And the Tanakhama would not argue with Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov. And it's interesting how the Ritva proves this, because the Gemara establishes in Masechta the Yevamos that Mishnosel shel Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov kav v'noki. We always passing like Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, and yet we passing like the Chachamim. He says that there's no stira; they never argued between the two. Again, we're going to have to clarify what the Chachamim was saying here, and why in the case of Zorik Evel Shusaram you go into Golos. But be that as it may, the Chachamim would agree that if after the Evan was already in flight, the victim stuck out his head and caught the Evan, so to speak, then he's part from Golos, and all this is going to be developed right now in the sugya. The Gemara says now, the Mishnah says the following. Zorak es ha-even l'chatzera v'harag. A man throws a stone within his own private domain and he kills somebody. Would he go into golos? And the Mishnah says it depends. We've already touched on this in the past. Im yesh rishus la-nizok l'kanes l'sham. If the killer had invited the victim to come in there, the victim was not trespassing, then golos. Then in that case, it's basically like the case of Yar, which means that the Nizak, since he had Rishus to go in there, that is a Yar, and the Rotzeach goes into Golos. Again, the question is obvious. If he invited him to come in, why isn't this considered Karav L'mezid? My gosh, you invite someone in, and then you kill him. Like Shkoya, right? Then that's called a Shogate? I would call that guy very close to Amazin. So the Ramban says the following. He says there are two different cases. In Bava Kama, on Daf Lamed Beis, the Gemara has the following case. Adam nichnas l'chanuso shel nagar birshus. A person goes into a carpentry shop, and he had permission to do so. V'nitisa bekas al panav argoso. And a piece of wood flies and kills him. Then the nagar, the carpenter, does not go into golos. And the Gemara says clearly it's karav l'mezid. So in other words, again, the principle seems to be, says the Ramban, that if I invite you in and I kill you, that's Karav L'mezid. So why then in this case, where Yesh Rishus L'Nizik L'Kanis L'Sham, and he throws an Evan into his own backyard, he is Chayev Gol. It says the Ramban, there's a difference. If I invite you to immediately come in and I kill you, that is absolute, profound, heavy-duty negligence. That's Karav L'Mezid. In other words, I tell you to enter into my carpentry and then I kill you, that's Karav L'mezid. In this case that we're dealing with, He gave him reshus, the rabbi used the term reshut klalit. He gave him a general green light, you know, license to come into his house. He says, whenever you want, come by. But it wasn't that he invited him in at one particular moment and he killed him. But rather, in general, the door is always open for you. In such a case, he has no way of knowing that the guy came into his house. Comes out according to Rabban the following. If Reuven invites Shimon into his house, and as a result, be'ikvot, that Shimon gets killed, Reuven is karv l'meis. He has no benefits from your miklas, not going to protect. If Reuven invites Shimon in by saying, in general, whenever you want to come in, come in, then it would depend. If he knows that Shimon came into the house and then he kills him, he's karv l'meis. But if he has no idea that Shimon took him up on the offer at that particular moment, because 24/7, 7 days out of the week, Shimon could show up at his house and he has the license to do so, that would be shogeg mamish, and then he goes into ghost. That's how I understand the Ramban. The Mishnah continues and says, v'im lav. If the Nizak had no right to enter into the chotzer, eino gola, shenemar, asher yavo, esrei yevayar, ma hayar, rishus l'nizak l'mazgli konis l'mafkol, rishus l'nizak l'mazgli konis l'shav, yotza chatzar, balabayish, shein rishus, l'nizak l'konis l'shav. So again, if the Nizak had no right to be there, then the mazik, the rotzeach, is potter from gols. It's not dumya diyar. Now notice that the word vila mazik is in parentheses. Do you see that? In other words, there's a girsa question here about the word vila mazik. And the one who analyzes this is the Aruch Lanei. The Marsha takes it out, and that's why it's in parentheses. Because according to the Marsha's understanding, it's irrelevant whether the mazik had reshus to be there. In fact, the entire scenario is that it happened in the mazik's own personal chotzer. So obviously he had rights to be there. But the Aruch Lanei wants to defend the integrity of this girsa that has the word vila mazik. And he says the following. Yesh ligros tevazu. We should include the word vila mazik in the text of the Gemara. In the Mishnah, excuse me. The kavaras ha-mishnah, what is the Mishnah trying to convey? Sheba'ofen she'nichlas odom she'lo b'rshus l'chotza chaveiro, li'olam ein b'hem chiyuv golos. Beinim harag bala chotzer b'shogiges ha'nichnas, u'beinim harag ha'nichnas b'shogiges bala chotzer. Lefi she'ein ze dumya liyar, she'yesh rishus l'shneim lishlof. So lefichov, yesh ligros v'la mazik l'anducha, she'im ein rishus v'la mazik l'ikonis l'chotza nizag. Eino gol. So the Mishnah wants to tell me that it works in both directions. The Ptur Golos, because it's not similar to Yar, works in both directions. Number one, if the Nizak had no right to enter into the Rishus of the Mazik. And number two, if the Mazik enters into the Rishus of the Nizak without permission, and he kills him. Of course, again, there's a fundamental difference between the two. In the case where the Nizak had no Rishus to enter into the domain of the Mazik, and the Mazik killed him, that's Karov Le Ones, and therefore it's not Dumya Diyar. In the case where the Mazik went illegally into the Rishus of the Nizak and killed him, that's already Karov Le Mezi. And we'll finish our discussion here tonight by ending the Mishnah. Abishol Omer. Abishol is also trying to elucidate the words of the Mishnah, the Tanakhama, the Mishnah. He's not coming to argue, and he says the following. Machativas Eitzim Rishus. We're going to learn something else from the case and the scenario described by the Torah in Dvar Mutes. Number one, we learned about the location. That's called Yar. And number two, we're going to learn about the activity, something from the activity which they were involved in, which ultimately led to the death of the victim. And that was Chativas Eitzim. They were chopping down wood. And you and I would have said, okay, who cares? I mean, why pay attention to such an insignificant detail? No. The Torah deliberately wanted to use Chativas Eitzim as a paradigm. And any case of Shogeg Begolos, the Chiv Golos, has to be similar to the Chativas Eitzim. What's Chativas Eitzim? Rishus. When you cut down a tree, you're not fulfilling any mitzvah whatsoever. Can anybody think of a case where maybe cutting down a tree you are fulfilling a mitzvah? sukkah. If you, let's say you want to build a sukkah, that's going to be the Gemara's kasha. But in any event, the Gemara now sees cutting down trees as the archetype of reshus. You know, there's no mitzvah involved in cutting down trees. Oh, yotzah. What does this exclude? And here we have three cases that are excluded by chativas eitz and reshus. Case number one: ha'av ha'makeh espino. Well, today we'd call this abuse, and Tabuti killed his son. Whew. That's the most cruel thing I ever heard of. Why is he potter from golos? And the Gemara is going to say that he's potter from golos because it's not reshus, but it's mitzvah. He's involved in a mitzvah. And the Gemara is going to derive this mitzvah from a pasuk in Tanakh, that when a father hits a son, he's doing a mitzvah. I have to tell you, I only remember getting hit by my father once. But how many times do I remember his going like this, you know, threatening with the belt? I mean, that was it. My mother was already a little bit more, she didn't break any hangers on me, but, you know, it's, at least she used to pinch a lot, you know. I remember. But anyway,
did it with love.
With love, right? So that's number one. Number two, harav harodes talmido. Wow! Could you imagine? You should know in the chadorim today, adayom hazeh, this goes on. I mean, I shouldn't publicize that because you know you'd probably prosecute them. But we have a lawyer here in the audience; we're in trouble. But this is what goes on. And the Gemara, what?
Societal standards have changed.
That's right. But the Gemara has a pasuk for this: that if a rebbe hits his student, then he's involved in a mitzvah. The third case, I understand, shliach bezdin. What's a shliach bezdin? A shliach bezdin is in charge of giving 39 malchus. So maybe accidentally hit him a little bit too hard. Some mafarshim say he added a 40th malchus. Other mafarshim say if he added a 40th, then he doesn't have the right to go into golus. That's not called a mitzvah act. His mitzvah terminated at the number 39. So within the 39, he's considered eino dumya de chativa seitzim de rishus. He's doing a mitzvah and he doesn't go into golus. If he kills him on the 40th, that's already not osing for mitzvah, and therefore he's gonna be chayav for that. The Rambam has a very unique sheet. The Rambam says that the shliach bezdin referred to in the Mishnah is not the shliach bezdin who's delivering the lashes, but rather he's the shliach bezdin who's calling the person into court. And the law is that if under certain circumstances, not all across the board, but if Reuven has a claim against Shimon, and Shimon is subpoenaed by the court to show up in front of the court, and he refused to do so, the shliach bezdin, if he has to, he's allowed to use physical force to get him into bezdin. If in doing so he accidentally killed him, then he's being osek b'mitzvah, and he doesn't have to go into golus. In all these three cases, because he was involved in a mitzvah, and it's not similar to chativas eitzim, not only is he potter from golus, but the gol adam is not allowed to take any revenge against him. He doesn't need the protection of golus. It's like what we called before Karavle, honest. Okay, Rav Osar, I will stop here.